This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans? Or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an evening of chamber music with a Grammy Award-winning quartet, a stage production of a teen love story dating back 200 years, or a joyful celebration as a Central City business and cultural corridor makes steady progress. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The renowned Grammy-winning Kronos Quartet is celebrating its 40th anniversary season with a stop in New Orleans this week. The San Francisco-based quartet returns to the Contemporary Arts Center with the regional premiere of the Philip Glass Commission String Quartet No. 6. Joining me by phone is Kronos Quartet founder, artistic director, and violinist David Harrington. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Congratulations on your 40th anniversary.
Thank you very much.
What are your thoughts on reaching this milestone?
Well, you know, I feel like as a musician, it can always be better. Music can, that is, and we're trying to make every note better. And so in a certain way, I feel like we're kind of just getting started.
And your plans as you enter your fifth decade?
This current season is one of the busiest we've ever had in terms of new pieces, recording releases, all sorts of appearances and plans for the future. So it's almost like a launching pad, this 40 kind of thing here.
You are performing several works written and arranged for the quartet, including String Quartet No. 6 by Philip Glass. I understand this will be the regional premiere for this piece. Tell me, what can we look forward to?
Philip's new quartet, which was just premiered about 3 weeks ago in Vancouver, is without any question one of his great pieces. It's three movements. It's a little over 20 minutes. And from the very first note to the very last note, it's just charged with vitality and beauty. We love this piece very much. Everything we're going to play in New Orleans has either been written for us or arranged. And in fact, we're going to start the program with music of Ken Benshoff, a piece called Traveling Music. And Ken wrote this for Kronos in 1973, and it is the very first piece ever written for Kronos. So basically, we're kind of spanning the 40 years in our performance in New Orleans. And then we're expanding our vision a little bit here, and we're going to be playing a very recent version that was made for us of Wagner's Prelude to Tristan and Isolde by Alexandra Rybakov. And then a really recent piece by Jerick Bischoff called A Semi-Perfect Number, and that's in honor of our 40 years. And then we're going to conclude the concert with music by Bryce Dessner called Tenebrae.
And how was Kronos founded 40 years ago? You guys started out in Seattle, Washington, I believe?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, the day after we play in New Orleans, we're headed to Seattle. And on the 16th of November, we play our 40th anniversary show in Seattle, where I started the group.
Wow.
And it was in August of 1973. On the radio, late one night, I heard a piece of music that changed the course of my whole life. And it was Black Angels by the American composer George Crumb. And as you might remember, in 1973, the effects of the war in Vietnam and the resulting not only amazing loss of lives on both sides of that war, but also what it did to a whole generation of young Americans and people like myself that were draft age at that time. And I felt at loose ends, and I didn't know what I should do with myself. And, you know, I'd grown up playing string quartet music, and I gave my first world premiere of a very new piece when I was 16, and I had a lot of things that I wanted to continue doing, but in my early 20s, all of a sudden, it felt like our society was falling apart, and what could I possibly do to contribute something? And then hearing Black Angels, it was very clear to me what I had to do. Basically, I had to play that piece. And in order to play that piece, I had to start a group, and that group is Kronos.
And the name Kronos, how did you come to choose it, and does it have a meaning?
Well, it was my wife that found that name, actually. We were trying to somehow tell the story of our time through music. We were looking through our Greek and Roman mythological dictionary, and she came upon the name Kronos, as in time or chronicle or timeliness or that sort of thing, spelled with a C-H. And I loved that idea and thought that a K was a more dramatic spelling. And it was only later that I found out that Kronos with a K was the father of the gods and the one that ate all of his children except for Zeus, and then he paid for it. But that was something I learned later.
You asked for drama and you got it.
That's it.
David, what will audiences take away from this performance?
As far as I'm concerned, each listener has a private collection of jeweled musical experiences that he or she adds to as time goes on, and hopefully a Kronos concert might become one of those special jeweled internal experiences.
David, thanks so much.
It's my pleasure.
Hope you enjoy your trip to New Orleans.
I'm looking forward to it very much.
David Harrington, founder, artistic director, and violinist with San Francisco's Kronos Quartet. The Contemporary Arts Center presents the Kronos Quartet in concert Thursday at 8 p.m. in the CAC Warehouse. More info at cacno.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. It's a fresh spin on a classic tale of romance and morality as Southern Rep Theatre celebrates the 200th anniversary of Jane Austen's masterpiece, Pride and Prejudice. Southern Rep is partnering with the Jane Austen Society of Louisiana to present a limited engagement of this playful romantic romp adapted for the stage by John Jory. Joining me to talk about the production are Southern Rep co-directors Jeffrey Gunshall and Aimee Hayes. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Diane.
Hello.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys are taking us back to England in the 1800s for this romantic tale of five sisters whose lives change when a wealthy man and his even richer friend move into their neighborhood. Tell me more about this classic tale and how will you present it to local audiences?
Well, it's one of the greatest romantic comedies of literature, and it coming to the stage is such an exciting thing. It's romance, it's fun. It's really kind of a wonderful confection of love, pride, and prejudice.
We have two sets of star-crossed lovers, and the women at the time, they needed a man to be taken care of. So there's only women in this particular family, and the house and all the money is going to go to a male cousin. So they literally could be put out of their house. So there's some big stakes going on about being married and, you know, finding felicity in their lives. And so this is where we start. And there's something that I've been thinking about, because I'm not from New Orleans. And I think about coming here and all of the rules and the ideas around Rex, or when you go into Mardi Gras, and even like watching PBS and seeing like what used to happen. But there's all these rules around New Orleans and around presenting yourself. And I think there's so much of that in this period in England. Like, how do you socially act? How do you interact and bow when people come in? What do you do? How are you proper? And if you're not proper, like if you run off and make out with somebody at the wrong time, your whole family is destroyed. It isn't like, oh, this is the problem, we're going to have to send her to Aunt Betty. It's like, no, you're going to lose your job. Nobody's going to be able to get married. So if you do something wrong, your sisters are totally out. Maybe that's something that young people can look at. I think, you know, the pendulum has swung to a way where it's like, we can do whatever we want. We can be as provocative as we want to be. And this is looking at that in a slightly different way. Are we responsible for our own choices? And how do we interact with other people and, you know, understand that our choices can affect many people around us?
Why did you choose to bring Jane Austen's masterpiece to the stage?
Well, I'm a huge Jane Austen fan, and I'd been speaking with Bill Reeves from the Jane Austen Society of Louisiana, and he said, you know, maybe you should think about doing a production of Pride and Prejudice. And just sort of at the same time, I got a copy of John Jory's adaptation of the classic. And I love the fact that, first of all, 90% of the play is exactly text from the book. So it's not a rewritten version of this love story. It's actually lines from the book. And Jane Austen was a great wit. Her humor is still funny today. I love that this version was really fast-paced, and it offered an opportunity for a lot of beautiful choreography and movement, and it really felt like an ensemble piece. There's 18 cast members. It's a massive production, and it just seemed like an updated classic was the right thing to do.
Now, when presenting this, you are bringing in a host of events with each one of the productions. Tell us about that.
Yes, it afforded us an opportunity to really make much of the romance. So we have a date night, so you can go to Saint Marie Brasserie before the show, and then you if you come over to Ursuline Academy, where we're presenting the play, for date night, we'll have champagne and chocolate fountain. We have a ladies' night, so get your girlfriends together, get your grandma and your aunt and them, and come on over and enjoy a fun night. And then the Jane Austen Society is co-hosting an afternoon tea, so we'll have finger sandwiches and tea and scones and all of that lovely stuff. And also, if you dress up, you get a discount on your ticket. So if you want to wear your Regency garb, come on out.
Nothing quite like a romantic comedy with really smart, articulate women.
Right.
Now, you mentioned Ursuline Academy. This is a new venue for you.
That's right. We are so happy to be at Ursuline. It's a terrific venue. It was completely redone after 2005. This is their first time having a big public performance like this that is not school related. So we're very excited for the community to get a chance to see this beautiful venue.
What is it that endears people to Jane Austen's works?
I think that Jane Austen is something that still makes sense today, the worlds that she creates. When you think about this play, this book, these are just five teenage girls. They're running amok and looking to make their way in life. And when you read the book and watch the play, you think, wow, teenagers really haven't changed that much. They fall in love. They do things they shouldn't do. Some of them are a little wiser than the others. And
they're just like people that way.
In 200 years, they're still the same. Look,
I know.
I know, but back then you could marry them off at 16. Get them out of the house.
What do you think people will remember most from this theater experience?
I think it'll be a full service experience from when you come into the parking garage. We're going to be, you know, the lobby, everything will feel like you're sort of stepping back into 1813. And then there are really some beautiful modern touches, I think, in Jeffrey's choreography and movement and in the music that make it feel very current. And that's the reason to do a classic, because you have something new to bring to it. And for us, it was really finding that connection between today and then.
I like it when theater or dance leaves them with a kind of feeling that they might not be able to exactly express, that it's something larger than their words. That's always my goal, that we've kinetically and mentally and physically somehow put them in a state where they feel something and they can't quite exactly articulate what it is.
Beautiful. Aimee and Jeffrey, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Diane.
Aimee Hayes and Jeffrey Gunshall co-direct Southern Rep's limited engagement of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, running November 13th through 24th at Ursuline Academy Theater, 2635 State Street, corner of State and Willow Street. More info at southernrep.com. We're going to kick it up a notch now. Revelers along Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard will make a joyful noise as the Central City Festival kicks off this weekend. The 7th annual event is sponsored by the OC Haley Boulevard Merchants and Business Association. The area is anchored by the Ashe Cultural Arts Center, Cafe Reconcile, and other businesses. Joining me now to talk about the festivities and the growth in the area is Ashe's Luther Gray. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Diane.
You will be making a joyful noise this year on the boulevard. What's new?
Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard is really, as they say in New Orleans, blowing up. We have so much development, so much excitement going on. Cafe Reconcile is undergoing major renovations. The Ashe Cultural Arts Center is hosting the African Presence in Mexico. Zeitgeist is showing great independent films. The Good Work Network is helping entrepreneurs really get their businesses off the ground. And there's going to be a big announcement at this festival that Irving Mayfield and the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra will be moving on the boulevard, and they're going to be moving into the former Gators warehouse, major department store right there on Martin Luther King and Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. They're planning a 350-seat plus jazz theater. So things are really very exciting on the boulevard.
That's a lot to celebrate. Wow. And you've got a great musical lineup for this festival.
We have probably the best lineup we've had over the 7 years of the festival. This year's headliner is New Orleans Cultural Ambassador Irving Mayfield with his New Orleans Jazz Orchestra Playhouse Review. We've got Latin King Freddie Omar and Kansu Banda. We've got this exciting second line featuring the one and only Treme Brass Band along with the Black Men of Labor. And we're also going to have the Creole Wild West, the oldest Mardi Gras Indian tribe in the history of New Orleans, and they're from uptown as well. They will be parading through the festival grounds, and we're going to be having a major tribute to two churches and leaders in Central City, the New Hope Baptist Church, Pastor John Raphael, who passed away earlier this year. We're going to be honoring him and his church, and we're going to be honoring New Home Family Ministries and their great leader, Bishop Robert Blakes, who also passed away this year. So both of their choirs will be performing. That's going to be something really to behold. Every year we work with young people, and we're going to be having Lucky Lou will be sponsoring a young people's bounce dance competition for dancers from 21 years of age and younger. So anyone wants to participate, there'll be cash prizes and other opportunities to perform along the boulevard.
Now, how did this festival get its start? This began 1 year after Hurricane Katrina?
Right. It began in 2006. Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard is part of the Louisiana State Main Street Initiative. We wanted to let the world know that Central City did survive. And as a matter of fact, Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard did not flood. Ashe was really open 6 weeks after the hurricane, sponsoring and hosting a lot of recovery meetings. And so we thought it was important to really let the world know that we were still here. So we began the festival in 2006 as a Make a Joyful Noise Gospel Festival. New Orleans has such great gospel traditions, and Central City has probably the largest concentration of churches in New Orleans of any neighborhood. And so it remained the gospel festival over the first 5 years. And last year, we renamed it the Central City Festival, really kind of opening things up to the whole community. So now we're in our second year of being the Central City Festival, Make a Joyful Noise.
So to what do you attribute all of this economic revitalization along the OC Haley corridor?
This corridor has a history of being a major shopping area. You look back in the 30s and 40s, you know, this was the area where Jewish immigrants, Jewish businesses, and Italians and all nationalities had their businesses. Of course, this was the also known as the Black Shopping District. Before Black folks could try on clothes on Canal Street, they shopped on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. And so after things changed where folks could try on clothes on Canal Street where they couldn't previously do, the boulevard kind of went into a decline over a couple of decades. And starting in the 1990s, it began this revitalization that has really, really started to take a lot of momentum. And when you look at Uptown, we'll always think about Magazine Street and Ferret Street having these revitalizations. But we really think that what's going on at Aretha Castle Haley is going to be probably one of the best revitalizations of any part of the city. We really have a vision for this area that's looking towards the tricentennial and beyond.
What other activities are going to be on tap? I think you have some things for younger kids.
Yes, there's going to be a whole children's area adjacent to Ashe. We're also going to have health fairs going on, a lot of information about jobs, housing, entrepreneur things, community organizations will be present. Of course, we're going to have great food and art vendors. Of course, Zeitgeist, they're going to be holding their own marketplace. And one addition also to the boulevard is that the New Orleans Food and Beverage Museum is also being built right across the street from what's going to be Irving Mayfield. So that corner of Martin Luther King and O.C. Haley Boulevard is really going to be an exciting one over the years to come.
A lot of positive things happening on the Aretha Castle Haley.
Oh, it is so exciting. We just encourage everybody to come out. If you haven't been down on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard lately, you've got to come down. We have our first club has opened, this Casa Borrega. Hugo Montero has opened with a Mexican cafe and jazz and Latino music club, which is also on the 1700 block of Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. He's going to have the after party. When you step in there, it's like you're in the Caribbean.
Sounds like fun. Luther, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Luther Gray with the Ashe Cultural Arts Center. The Central City Festival, Make a Joyful Noise, kicks off Saturday from 11 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. in the 16 and 1700 blocks of Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. The event is free and open to the public. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.